A case of alleged tech theft at Apple's self-driving car lab. An ex-Apple worker, Zhang Xiaolong, was charged on Monday for stealing trade secrets and was arrested earlier this month at the San Jose airport as he was trying to leave for China with a last-minute ticket. That's according to a criminal complaint filed by U.S. authorities in federal court against Zhang. The case comes at a time of heightened sensitivity about key technology in U.S. companies getting transferred to countries like China, with the Trump administration even considering moves to restrict investment by foreign companies into U.S. tech startups.
The death toll in western Japan has climbed to more than 100 as rescuers race to find survivors in the deadliest flooding the country's seen in more than a decade. The region was slammed by torrential rains last week, and dozens of people are still missing. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe held an emergency meeting in Tokyo on Monday. Evacuation orders have been scaled back from the weekend, but nearly 2 million people are still ordered to stay away from their homes. So far, the death toll has been the worst in flooding since 1983, where 117 people were killed in heavy rains.
Bidding and outbidding each other over and over. Hours after Rupert Murdoch raised an offer for Britain's Sky TV, rival Comcast raised its offer in a deal valuing Sky at $34 billion. The saga has been ongoing since 2016. Murdoch already owns 39% of Sky. His attempts to buy more in the past drew criticism from politicians wary of his influence over the press.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It is July 12th, and we're back at it again with another edition of The Opening Bell. Thanks for being here this morning, and we appreciate it, as always. We've got a good broadcast lined up for you, too. So you tuned in on a good day. Thursday is Thought Leader Thursday here on The Opening Bell, and Brent McKittrick will be here. We'll talk a little bit about human resources and benefits with Brent in our Thought Leader conversation this morning, especially health benefits and the other benefits that are offered in the wellness packages at companies. That'll be coming up momentarily here. In the second segment this morning, L.A.-based same-day delivery services expanding to Chicago. We will talk to the Executive Vice President of Operations there about the expansion and what it might mean for Chicago. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Asian stock markets are up today following Wall Street's decline yesterday amid U.S.-Chinese trade tensions, and oil prices recovered some of yesterday's steep losses as well. On the board this morning, the Nikkei is going to end the day up about 1% to 255 points. The Hang Seng up about 169, 0.5%. Shanghai is up more than 2%, up about 59 points. In Europe this morning, markets are generally in the green as well. In London, Germany, and France, up 0.25% to 0.5%. And in the United States, futures are pointing toward opening gains later this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 147 points. With an implied open up about 138. The S&P futures are up about 1250. NASDAQ futures are up about 31. Oil is trading at $70.94 a barrel. A couple of business stories before we begin with our thought leader this morning. Papa John's founder, John Schnatter, has resigned as chairman of the board. The company made the announcement late yesterday, hours after he apologized for using a racial slur during a conference call in May. Forbes says Schnatter used the N-word during a media training exercise. When asked how he would distance himself from racist groups, he reportedly complained that Colonel Sanders never faced a backlash for using the word as well. But KFC has not responded to that. In a statement released by Papa John's, Schnatter said reports attributing use of inappropriate and hurtful language to him were true. He says regardless of context, he apologizes. Twitter is beginning the removal of suspicious accounts that hit is locked from its counts of users' followers. So you may be seeing a loss of users today if you're on Twitter. Twitter says users are likely to see a reduction in their following counts through the next couple of days as it drops millions of accounts that are either bots or fake accounts, and also locked accounts. An account that is locked cannot tweet, like, or retweet posts and won't be shown ads. The company said that the move will not affect its number of monthly or daily active user figures in the first 3 months of this year. It had 336 million active users. Twitter has been working to remove fake accounts, bots, and abusive posts from its service. And Twitter shares have been suffering. At least earlier in the week, they lost as much as 6% in one day because of this move. Thought Leader Thursday this morning, Brett McKittrick is here. He's the SVP and Senior HR Consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consulting, part of Associated Bank. Our conversation this morning is going to be on benefits packages and especially on different health and wellness packages. Brett, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me back.
Let's start our conversation talking about benefits provided to by employers to employees. You sent over a wonderful slideshow of all the different things, the different changes that are happening. If you had to pick from a list of all of these things, what are the biggest ones that seem to be emerging?
Sure. And we're talking about from a health benefits perspective, which, you know, the bulk of health benefits is actually employer-sponsored health insurance. No surprise to anyone. Within that, I think what we're seeing is the advent of telemedicine or telehealth. Mm-hmm. And that's something where via phone or often video conference, you'll talk to a healthcare provider, a nurse practitioner, maybe even an RN or certainly a PA or a physician about your health needs. Those could be acute needs, like you would maybe instead of, you know, going to the ER or to a quick care center, you dial up the video conference, or it could be something from a chronic management standpoint, like managing diabetes.
Is this something that we'll likely see more in a rural area, rural parts of the country, or is it something we would see in big cities as well?
It starts in the outlying areas for sure, mm-hmm. just because, you know, for the obvious reasons. But we are starting to see them in metropolitan areas, and the biggest reason is cost savings. You know, these telemedicine or telehealth centers are run either by the insurance company, sort of as a value add, if you will, by the healthcare providers as maybe a lower cost way of delivering medical care, or by a third party vendor.
Because sometimes you go when you make an appointment as an employee, I make an appointment to see my doctor. Sometimes I go in and he just asks me questions, and maybe the nurse will take my temperature or something. All of those things you can do via video hookup, can't you?
Yeah, most of them you can. You know, the average primary care physician appointment is 15 minutes. Or it might be like 14 and a half, I believe, and that's nationwide. Now, if you have a huge laceration in your arm, you're going to the ER or the quick care. But diagnosing even something like strep, where certainly you would need the culture sample, but in beyond that, you may need just to look at a person's throat. Video cameras, the technology is there to look at a person's throat remotely.
And with some of the different wearable devices, you could also get a pulse reading. You could also take your own temperature. There's all kinds of things that.
That's exactly right. So for chronic disease management, maybe someone suffering from high blood pressure or something, and they wear a device on them that measures that for them. Then they can meet maybe monthly with a provider via video conference where they talk about their daily habits, their exercise habits, their eating habits, all the things that might contribute to that hypertension.
One of the other big trends, and this is a 9 out of 10 employers, according to this one survey in 2017, had behavioral health plans. Walk us through this one.
Sure. Behavioral health, from an emotional standpoint, from a mental health standpoint, all of these things are coming more to light. I think it's always been there, but it's becoming more prevalent in the workplace to see how these things may manifest themselves into physical health problems, which from a company standpoint affects the bottom line. Maybe it's higher rates in health insurance, maybe it's absenteeism, or the idea of presenteeism in the workplace. Yeah, you're there present working, but are you really working? How much of your time is dedicated to that job when you're concerned or worrying about something else? So through an employee assistance program, through the health plan, through wellness initiatives, employers are becoming more concerned about that employee's mental and behavioral health as well.
And that sort of dovetails into the next one, which is the employee assistance programs. Mm-hmm. Those have always, it seems like, have always been part of benefits at companies. What has changed with those offerings?
I think they're becoming more robust. Okay. You know, the EAPs, when they start out, they're more or less referral services. And you'll still find some of those sort of skinny plans, if you will. But now you actually have coaching and counseling with regard to the EAP, where you might make an appointment with someone. And that kind of goes back to another way to deliver in the telemedicine realm, where you're talking on the phone to a counselor once a week or once a month. And that's all provided through that EAP, which could be its own standalone plan, that employee assistance program, or could be part of the employer-sponsored health plan.
And how are the – I'm always confused how EAP is different from, let's say, counseling for weight loss or counseling for smoking cessation. How are they different?
Well, in a lot of times they are different because different providers may provide them. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes it's the same. And what we're seeing, when I said the EAPs are becoming a little more robust, they are offering those type of services as well. So in addition to, you know, it could go on the spectrum from drug addiction counseling mm-hmm. all the way down to weight loss coaching and everything in between.
The other thing, too, that's gaining a lot of traction are the group efforts to get us all more healthy. So having a bicycle class, a spinning class, or a yoga class, or something like that to, I guess, mainly get us into a gym and working out, a participatory wellness is what it's called.
Yes, that's exactly right. You know, when you think of employer wellness, there's a huge spectrum. And on one end, maybe the simpler end, the less complex end, is that participatory wellness where, hey, we're providing our employees with the opportunities, whatever they gravitate toward or whatever maybe would help solve their health problems, with the opportunities to improve and better their lives from a health perspective. Again, from that employer's perspective, that affects bottom line rates on insurance. That affects, you know, with fewer claims, for instance, or fewer chronic claims when a person is generally healthier. Helps absenteeism, helps workers' comp claims. You know, less likely a person will be injured at work if they're healthier, and things of that nature.
And the one that we talked to, and we know we talked on a past Thought Leader conversation about this, about companies giving you a financial incentive mm-hmm. to become healthy. I was surprised this one study, one report showed it jumping almost 10% from 56% in 2016 to 66% in 2017, the number of companies that are giving these incentives.
Yeah, I think that's for two reasons. One, more companies are just getting on board with the idea mm-hmm. because maybe their health insurance company, if they're fully insured, their health insurance carrier is offering programs or incentives for the company to offer these wellness incentives to their employees. The other reason is more companies are subscribing to the carrot approach instead of the stick approach. Yeah. Do you penalize someone on their health insurance premium, for instance? Do you have a smoking surcharge? Or do you provide an incentive for someone to join a smoking cessation program? The dollars might be exactly the same, but the mindset's different.
Or in some cases, if you're a not smoker, we will give you X amount of extra dollars an hour because
exactly.
you're not going out to smoke.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right.
Or more vacation time.
Exactly. Yeah. And those things can be done in maybe a taxable way, such as more time off or increased wages or a bonus. Mm-hmm. Or it could be done in a non-taxable or tax-free way through the health insurance plan. Again, maybe a contribution to the health savings account from the employer, which is tax-free to the employee, or a rebate off the premium cost to the employee mm-hmm. as well.
And Brett, I know we've talked about this too, about when these sorts of efforts become intrusive into the personal life of an employee.
Yeah.
That's still being addressed, I'm guessing.
It is. And employers are really, I mean, oftentimes taking the approach of let's try it and see how our population reacts. Yeah, every company has a different culture, obviously. And what might seem intrusive for one culture is different from another. And, you know, you have sort of a hip tech company with a lot of young people in a city where everyone bikes to work all the time. That's going to have a different culture than a manufacturing company in a rural part of the state. And so when you think of those two differences, then you also have to consider from a wellness perspective what's being done for an employee versus what's being done to an employee. And we have talked about this before, but when we think of the idea of, you know, you have this maybe potentially disgruntled employee who had their shift changed, you know, coworkers were dismissed from their department, so their job got a lot harder. They're a little unhappy with their latest raise. And now they think, my company is telling me I can't smoke or how much I should weigh.
Yeah.
I'm sick of it. You know, so employers have to balance that reaction.
And one of the ways they're balancing it, I guess, could be personalizing the benefits. Instead of having a cookie cutter, mm-hmm. One size fits all, doing this individually with each employee. Is that something that's gaining traction?
It is for the right employer, because that does take time and cost money. You know, to individualize things. However, to your point, Steve, you see better results and certainly better acceptance. And it's how you really communicate the stuff and sell it to your employees as well.
Yeah, the scenario you gave is a good one. One I saw was older employees who felt that they because of their age or whatever physical condition they were in, couldn't participate with the younger employees because I guess there was a department workout routine that people were doing. The younger employees obviously went and did this, but the older employees felt like they were being left out a little bit because they couldn't do it.
Yeah. And companies have to be careful when they're installing these wellness initiatives because there's all kinds of employment laws that come into play, like that one, the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, for instance, the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act. You know, that comes into play from the standpoint of, hey, if I'm unable to do whatever I need to do to get this health reward because of my disability or chronic medical condition protected under the ADA, what's my alternative that I can still get that reward? And if a company doesn't provide that alternative, they're in violation of the ADA.
The stakes here are pretty high on both sides, aren't they? I mean, you've talked about the financial part of this, but the last thing a company wants to be is brought into court on something like this.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's why, you know, it's more than a notion to adopt a wellness program or an initiative. And a lot of companies will dip their toes in the water and get a feel for it on some pretty benign stuff. But as they get more and more into what's beyond that participatory wellness and maybe something that would be outcome-based based on a person's health risk factor, they really need to get expert help and guidance from the proper benefits consultants to understand how to navigate those laws.
Have you, and I'm sure you have heard before from folks who always, the critics who say, never trust human resources, that they don't have the employee benefit at stake at heart. It's the company's benefit. But it sounds like all of the things we're talking about here, they really do want to have a healthier you.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the wellness initiatives, no matter what they may have started in, at the end result, it is going to be a healthier you. And if you gravitate toward a particular initiative because of a personal health problem that you have, it's only going to help you. Now, again, that's not to say all the companies, notions are benevolent, right? We look at companies seeing this as a way to save money on health insurance claims and prevent absenteeism as well.
We've been talking a lot in the opening bell recently about mergers and acquisitions. This is a hot time for this. The impact of some mergers on health benefits and other employer offered benefits, it can be pretty severe, can't it?
It really can. And, you know, oftentimes in an M&A transaction, you have, 100 lawyers working on this, charging obscene amounts of money, right? And they're dealing with the important security issues, which makes a lot of sense. Okay, from an exchange standpoint, if it's a stock sale or an asset sale, they have big federal regulations, oftentimes state regulations, that they have to comply with. Sometimes the forgotten aspect are the benefits and the HR. You know, how's payroll going to be run now?
Yeah.
You know, it's something as simple as that. No one thinks about until after the acquisition, oftentimes. And from a benefit standpoint, generally speaking, the acquiring company, it's their benefits that will prevail. Okay, are those better or worse than what the employees of the company being acquired are used to? Are they coming in as new hires without any seniority, or is that being adopted? There's all kinds of things that need to be thought about in an M&A transaction.
From an employee standpoint, how can we make sure that we're protected in this, or can we?
Well, I think being your own advocate, and if you have, large enough to have a dedicated and robust HR department, you ask HR these questions. You know, the head of HR is going to have the ear of the CEO or the CFO, at least, people that are directly involved in the merger and acquisition transaction, even if that HR director is not. And they are going to need to really be an advocate then for their employees by saying, hey, this is going to significantly affect work product in the future.
Never be afraid of going and asking these questions.
Never.
All right. Brett, it's always good chatting with you. Thank you, and we'll see you again next time.
Sounds good, Steve. Thanks.
Brett McKittrick is the SVP and Senior HR Consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consulting, part of Associated Bank. It's our Thought Leader Conversation. We do it every Thursday for you right here on The Opening Bell. You can find more about our thought leaders and listen to past conversations at WGNradio.com, as well at Associated Bank's website. Just hit their website and go to /thought leadership.
Hi, this is Katherine Davis with today's InnO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInnO.com. Google announced Wednesday that it is coming to Naperville as part of the tech company's Grow with Google initiative, which helps create economic opportunity in communities across the U.S. Google will kickstart this local work by hosting a free one-day event at Elements at Water Street on August 6th. Busbank, a Chicago-based transportation startup, has acquired New York-based Buster, a digital platform for booking buses, shuttles, and vans, which helps to make booking group buses as easy as calling an Uber. Terms of the deal were not disclosed. And GoPuff, an on-demand convenience store delivery startup, announced that its alcohol delivery arm GoBooze has launched in Chicago. The app offers a range of Chicago beers from Goose Island, Revolution, and Half Acre, as well as national alcohol brands you'd find at any liquor store. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program, and thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. The same-day delivery service Easer is expanding to Chicago. Joining us this morning is Gary Lassick, the Executive Vice President of Operations at Easer, online at GetEaser.com. Gary, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity.
Let's talk a little bit about the service for people who are in the listening audience who may not be familiar with Easer. Tell us about it.
Well, we are just a same-day local delivery service that offers at any drop of a moment that you need something moved, it gets things from one end of the area to the other. So it's a very simple service to put together.
Yeah. You are expanding to the Chicago area. You've been in Los Angeles, out on the West Coast. How have things been going?
It's been going well. We've been expanding well out here. We started very small back in 2015 to build this operation, and then really launched all the tools back in the spring of 2016. And we, you know, started with a small market and built from there. Day to day got bigger and bigger, and now we're all through L.A., Orange, San Bernardino, Riverside counties, and adding more counties out here, and we started, expanding from there. Last year, we moved into Minneapolis, St. Paul, and then a couple other cities over the time, and now we're opening up Chicago.
And the beauty of this is there's an app involved, and you can maybe talk to us more about how the nuts and bolts of using all of this. But you're not just catering here to businesses. You're catering to individuals and businesses alike, aren't you?
Yes, yes. This tool is very simple in the sense that it's useful for not only businesses, which we have a full online source for business with a website that has full ordering, but we have an app. The app that is available for anybody that's out shopping, that is out, find something that's large, it doesn't fit in their car, it's just oversized, and they just, you know, instead of waiting for delivery for the next Tuesday or whenever the availability of the store to deliver, the app can be called on demand, and the driver can be there in minutes to pick it up, take it home.
Part of this too is it's a cashless transaction, and also I know that you promote sort of that peace of mind of, well, is this package going to be left on a doorstep somewhere or out in the yard or near the gate, which I can tell you happens a lot here in the city of Chicago. You want to position yourself in a way where that is set you apart from the others, right?
Very true, very true. You know, it's not only there in Chicago. Unfortunately, it's happening in every community from coast to coast. We're finding porch pirates that are just, scouting delivery services day and night. And what we are promoting is to completely have it delivered when someone is available. So you can track your order from point A to point B. You know where it's at. You have full visibility, and we focus on delivering when someone is available to accept it. We don't want to just leave things on porches.
And explain to us again how you've been able to nail that.
Well, it's convenient in the sense that we don't have operations hours, in the sense that, you know, we stop moving at 5 or we do things. So we're not moving in the traditional sense of a route driver. Everything that we move is direct. So if we're picking up from a store, it's going to be directly to that destination within the transit time. So there's no, 100 stops before it gets there. It's not the some time of a delivery window between noon and 4. It's going to be at a given time of just straight direct traffic, whatever time to get there.
Yeah. Gary, we are in this gig economy where folks are driving cars and they've become their taxi drivers, and others have started this delivery too. I think they call it the last mile delivery service. Amazon, yes. I think, has recently launched something like this. But talk to us a little bit about how people become drivers for Easer, because this could be a potential job for somebody out there.
Of course, of course. Anybody that's wanting to do this full time or part time or in their spare time can easily get signed up. It's just a matter of downloading the app and signing up on that point there. From there, it's just a matter of a few steps, and within a week or so, you're set and ready to go. It's not really all that intense and difficult. It's just a few steps of putting in some information and reviewing some videos. That's all it is.
What's the business model like in terms of price structure, and what does it cost to use the service, and how much do these drivers, what kind of money can they make doing this?
Well, the structure is there's a minimum to use, which is just $28 to get something moved about 5-6 miles. And it works on a basic system of miles and time. So it's a very simple calculation in the difference of being from a traditional route where you had not only your matrix of what that rate would be plus, after hours charge or home delivery charge or any accessorial extra charges that these delivery companies wanted to put on. We eliminated all those. So drivers have been, let's just put it this way, here in LA, drivers have been doing very well in the sense that each driver is probably making a few hundred dollars that are working part-time, or making a few hundred dollars extra each week. And we have some full-times that are doing much, much better than that. There in Chicago, we've been there maybe a month now, and we've got a handful of loads. But it's a matter of building awareness and getting to a point where everybody is kind of familiar with the user name.
Yeah, this area, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this delivery service, home delivery service. Is this an area that is ripe for more disruption? I know I mentioned the Amazon thing that. They're doing that last mile delivery. They're launching their fleet of trucks that people can buy into. Is this, even with Amazon, the monolith out there, is this area still ripe for disruption and open for players, many more players?
I would say it is, because Amazon is servicing Amazon. And everybody else is going to want to compete in some way. Well, we're going to give you that option. Any business that would like to compete and offer same day service, we can step in there and take care of that.
You mentioned the expansion to Minneapolis and now to Chicago. What does the next couple of years look like? Where do you hope to expand next, and where do you see the company in, let's say, 5 years?
Well, I can tell you we're already in Houston, Texas, Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, Nevada, and we intend to make it all the way in, cover more cities from coast to coast, and hopefully, who knows, international.
Yeah. Gary, it's wonderful hearing all of this and chatting with you, and we wish everybody at Easer the best, and welcome to Chicago.
Thank you very much, and I would encourage everybody to, if anybody has any questions, to check out our website or give us a call.
Very good. Gary Lasek is the Executive Vice President of Operations at Easer, and it's geteaser.com. You can also follow them on Twitter, too, at geteaser, E-Z-E-R.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up 162 points. That's good for 0.5%. S&P, NASDAQ futures are about 0.5% higher as well, headed to the opening bell at 8:30 Chicago time. Gold is trading lower, off about 20 cents at $1,244.20 an ounce. Silver is a little bit higher this morning. Let's get the latest on agriculture now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. No doubt that the trade board talk had an impact yesterday, not only on Wall Street, but on feedlots, ranches, and grain fields. Let's look at livestock. First of all, hog and cattle futures extended their decline on trade war concerns. Livestock futures down 1% or more yesterday. And at the end of the trading session, the August lean hog contract down $1.10. The August live cattle contract down $1.57 a hundredweight. And the August feeder cattle contract down $2.40 a hundredweight. Then we took a look at the grain market for yesterday. The EPA's acting chief made some comments on carrying out the proposed regulation cuts on industry, as President Trump talked about in his campaign. That had somewhat of an effect, but on the grain market yesterday, we saw soybeans end at a near-decade low. And favorable crop weather in the Midwest weighed on soybeans and corn, which also hit contract lows, and wheat slumped for a third straight day, following corn and soybeans lower. At the end of the session, the September wheat contract down 18 cents a bushel, the July corn contract down 7.5, and the July soybean contract ended down 21¾ cents at $8.29¾ a bushel. That's a look at markets. Have a great day.
Thanks, Orion.
I'm Orion Samuelson.
Sorry about that. Thanks, Orion. You too. Also, a couple of stories here before we leave you this morning. The South Korean motor company Hyundai says the labor union for that company says steep auto tariffs could cost U.S. jobs. The labor union at the company says if President Trump goes ahead with imposing 25% tariffs, it'll hurt Hyundai's U.S. sales and jeopardize some 20,000 jobs at a factory in Alabama. Union says South Korean carmakers are already being penalized for cars, a bilateral trade agreement. Seoul and Washington agreed to postpone the removal of tariffs on Korean pickup trucks by another 20 years. That was the thing that they pointed to. The U.S. Department of Commerce is investigating whether auto imports pose enough national security threats to justify tariffs. The European Union warned auto tariffs could lead to global retaliation. The U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration has approved a rule requiring drug makers to identify a legitimate need for opioids to justify their production in an attempt to rein in their diversion for illicit purposes. The DEA says the final rule sent for publication in the Federal Register will consider the extent to which legally prescribed drug is diverted for abuse when the agency sets its annual opioid production limits. Rule requires DEA to share notices of proposed production quotas and final production quota orders with state attorneys general. Attorney General Jeff Sessions says the new rule will allow the DEA to be more responsive to facts on the ground in fighting the opioid controversy. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, July the 12th, Labor Department releases the Consumer Price Index for June today, and Freddie Mac reports on this week's average mortgage rates. A couple of other things on the calendar today. We'll get a look at the EIA natural gas report. We'll also see a couple of Fed speakers out there today, including Patrick Harker. We'll see the Treasury budget a little later on, the Fed balance sheet, money supply as well. Neil Kashkari also is out speaking today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, July the 12th.